Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour, and today is Thursday, July 25th, 2024. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's choosing to join us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the two words that say start here in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? That chapter of that book contains a narrative description and explanation of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. It's a tool I've been using to great effect for almost 20 years now to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click the link, download it, print it off, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over again absolutely free. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And if you choose to do that before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet. It contains an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and it contains a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope people do all of that soon and often, primarily because it tends to improve the quality of people's lives the more they actively apply these tools in their lives, and secondarily because it tends to prompt comments, questions, answers and testimonials, and if you have any of those to share with us, we'd appreciate you doing so by giving us a call at 563-999-3581. Once you call that number, if you press 1 on your phone, it'll put the little icon of a hand by your phone number. I'll be able to turn on the microphone and announce you by your area code, and we can have a conversation. If you would prefer not to call or you do not have access to calling, you can send us an email. You can email me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org, and or you can email Jeannie at jeannie at whyagain.org. That's whyagain.org. And if we get a comment or a question from you, we'll address it on the internet show, and as time allows, then send you a notification about what day and time that occurred so you can listen back to the archives for your feedback or input. And we greatly appreciate whenever anybody chooses to do that because it makes it far easier for us to live into our intention with this work. The intention we have with this work is to be a service. And if you would be so kind as to let us know what is landing most effectively for you as we do these readings or we have people call in to do worksheets, et cetera, whatever is of most benefit for you, we would appreciate hearing about that so that we can do more of it. And we weren't on the air yesterday, so if you're looking in the archives for a show from On the 24th of July, it's not available because Blog Talk was down, technical problems. And that might be extending to today. We don't know. But the switchboard seems to be up and running, and it let me in, so I'm going to proceed as though there's a show happening and that people can access it. And if they can't get on live, maybe they can get on through the archives. I'm grateful for all the people that I encounter. I'm working with them either in private practice, or I'm working with them in the support groups, or the people that I get to encounter from doing the Journey's Dream sponsored podcast titled the On Your Mind podcast. And that process, that taking on that volunteer role as the, you might call it chief cook and bottle washer for that podcast, has introduced me to quite a few phenomenal people over the years. And I just finished reading the book by Martha. And Martha has multiple names after her original title. And it's pardon me while I try and pull this up. Her last name is spelled K-A-R-T-A-O-U-I. Carteo, I don't know how to pronounce that. But her middle name is Glory, and she was given that name at birth by the man who was running the cult that her parents were in. And she has a very compelling story about being raised in the cult until she was about 26 years of age, and how she eventually escaped. And she's approaching the 25-year anniversary of having been out of the cult. And she talks about her healing journey and her trying to find a sense of purpose in life based on some of the really dramatic things that have happened to her as a member of a cult and as somebody who's sustained lots and lots of abusive situations over the years. And the reason that I'm going to go ahead and do an interview with her is because she doesn't have any magic wand quick fix here, you know, take this pill kind of a solution. She understands, as most people do that have been through this, that when you've been through a lot of traumatic events in your life, they take their toll and they affect you in the ways that you have developed to resist and survive in these abusive situations was probably the best thing for you to do when you were younger, and it's probably not the best thing for you to do when you're older. So how can we live and grow and become more functionally adaptive, you might say? Well, for most people, that's a real journey, a real process of every day, day in and day out, for as long as I'm still alive, I'm going to need to be working on myself. I'm going to need to apply the tools that I've learned. I'm going to need to maintain the vigilance that understands I could get triggered to upset in any moment, which might throw me back into the use of these unproductive patterns from my past. And if I'm keeping that as my awareness, then I'm much less likely to want to blame others for my upset as I move through the world, move through life, choose interpretations for life events that might trigger some of those old deep wounds and emotionally immature adaptive processes. And if I'm aware of that when it comes up, then I can choose differently. If I fall into the trap of thinking, oh, I'm done with my work, then I'm much more likely to blame or attribute blame to others for the unpleasant nature of whatever I experience internally. So because she understands that, because she talks about a whole variety of therapeutic techniques, including prayer and meditation and, you know, a sense of purpose in life and belonging to community, et cetera, I'm going to be interviewing her in the near future, and we'll let you know when that podcast is uploaded and aired. I also have a number of people that I work with on a regular basis who've had very rough childhoods, and they've developed these rather unproductive patterns, and they are individually learning how to, you might say, master that. You might say, learn more adaptive processes for interacting, for improving their relationships. And I have the privilege of working with a lot of people who've gone through that process and are still going through it day to day. And it's just a very hopeful thing. It isn't the magic cure that the Disney movies would have you believe, but it is a very hopeful thing when you understand that every day I have the ability to choose differently. Every day I've got new options. And so when we talk about the way of mastery, starts so many of its lessons with "now we begin," and how the Yeshua letters, almost every one of them, begins with the phrase, "now we begin," because there's a recognition that in this new present moment, I can choose again. I don't have to play into the belief that I'm a victim of my past or what anybody does in the present, because I have the ability to choose. I get to choose how I interpret, and I get to choose how I respond to whatever unfolds around me, whether that is external life events or the choices of the people around me. And, you know, that's one of the more important things that I share with people that I've learned over the years, is that what happens to me and around me in my life is nowhere near as important as how I choose to interpret and respond to those events. That's such an important lesson in my life that it earned its way onto the list of bottom line observations. And literally, my experience of life, as is echoed in the Way of Mastery in the first and second lesson, my actual experience of life is created by how I choose to interpret and respond to the life events that unfold around me. My life is not created by life events. My life is created by how I choose to interpret and respond to those events. The actual impact on me is driven much more by my interpretation and choice of response than it is driven by the actual events in my life. And whenever anybody wakes up and realizes that and then begins to choose actively how they're going to respond, everyone I've ever worked with who's decided to do that has come back and said, "Oh my gosh, this is a game changer. This is a fundamental shift in my life experience, and it is the primary mechanism through which I improve my experience of life. And I do that by choosing a different interpretation. I do that by choosing, actively choosing how I'm going to respond, rather than, as Dr. Michael Rice would say, letting myself decide from the automatic decision processor in my mind and let myself just react," which means to act again as I did before. And often I'm reacting in a certain way simply because the way I did it in the past allowed me to survive Thrive? I don't know. But survive, yeah. And, you know, there's that idea that in our evolution as people, anything that allowed us to survive to the next day was something we thought, oh, I better do that, more of that. Or if a similar situation comes up again, I better choose that. No vision for the big picture, no looking to the future, just from that simple kind of a reflexive survival level response. And that's why we are hopeful that people will choose to pick up these tools and dismantle those false beliefs. We know they're false if they're negative. Those trauma energies, those response patterns, so that there's this clean and open space, as the what Course in Miracles says. You know, here's the process of forgiveness that Michael Rice found in the Course in Miracles. It says, open a curtain in your practice. Put down everything you think you want, your trifling treasures put away, and leave a clean and open space for the Christ mind to come. So if I clear out of my energies that auto response from panic, from fear of not surviving, if I clean that up and I recognize in this moment, whenever I get triggered to an upset, I take a breath, scan the environment, and recognize, wait a minute, I'm not being threatened physically. My life isn't being threatened physically. My loved ones are not being threatened physically. So my angry or my hurt response here is not the best response. It's an inappropriate, it's an overreaction or an underreaction. So let me take a breath, let me get centered, let me ask to be shown a different way to look at and interpret this current situation, and then choose again from what is likely to be a much more broad and deep range of potential responses than what I was going to have before. We talked about this a few days ago. Guy Finley talks about how whenever we let a negative response drive our reaction, it's only going to give us two choices, fight or flight. Whenever we give our authority over to any negative response that we feel because of a negative interpretation about life events, because we're resisting the flow of life, whenever we do that, we've given authority over to a mind that can only either do one of two things, fight or run. Very simplistic, very limited. And since it's limited in its range of understanding and scope, it's very limited in the benefits that it can provide me. Yeah, I might survive by doing this automatic process over and over again. But I may have done damage to relationships. I may have avoided an experience that could help me expand my life in a creative expression. It might be that I'm depriving myself and others that I care about from the benefits of my intellect being applied accurately to decide what response in this situation might lead to the highest and best for myself and those around me. Yeah, I survived, but at what cost? So whenever we feel a resistance, whenever we judge, whenever we are feeling angry, sad, scared, hurt, or frustrated, in this work, we're encouraged to try using that awareness of those energetic emotions, or you might say emotional energies, use them as an awareness that there's feedback for my system and that the feedback is about how there's something that I'm choosing in this moment as an interpretation that is less than accurate, that is limiting rather than expansive, that is negative rather than loving, or fearful rather than loving. So that's the core of the work and the core of the invitation over and over again as we engage this work. And I see that a few people have joined us on the switchboard, which is nice. Thanks. Yesterday we were unable to have the show on Blog Talk because of the technical difficulty, so it is nice that there's people who can get on today. And again, I'm going to throw open the invitation. At any point in time, please feel free to press 1 and make a comment or raise a question. This is a Thursday, and so there will be a support group tonight. All the information you would need to join us in that support group is available on the MindShiftersAcademy.org website. And there's a separate login information page for Tuesdays and a separate one for Thursdays. So please double check if you're going to join us or you're going to pass that information along to somebody else. Let them know that while it's absolutely free to join, you have to have the right login information. And if I start up reading from The Way of Mastery again, please remember at any point in time, it's an open invitation to press 1 and or send an email and or I guess there is no and or. You either press 1 or you send an email. But don't let the fact that I'm reading something put you off if something has come to mind, even if it doesn't seem to be relevant to what's being read in the moment. All of our best, perhaps most of our best of shows are the product of people like you calling in and raising a hand and having a question. So I'm going to go back to the lesson 3 in The Way of Mastery titled The Power of Forgiveness. And what I dealt with, what we were dealing with in that lesson when I last read was the idea that whenever any negative thought comes into your mind about something in the past that you acted in a way that you're now not proud of acting, it's coming to your awareness so that you can use this process of forgiveness to dismantle those energies. One of the ways that it was talked about in one of the darshans that JM did on this work was he said, when something comes up that you have had happen in the past that was upsetting, it's coming to your awareness in this moment, not as a punishment, not as a reminder of how bad you are, how damaged or broken you are. It's coming to your awareness and bringing you an opportunity to bring new presence to energies which once defeated you. It's just what this lesson is telling us. If it's coming to my awareness, even if it happened days, weeks, months, years, even decades ago, as it comes to my awareness now, I can dismantle the judgments, the energies, the false perceptions that were in place when this originally happened. I can clear it out of my energy system. I can extend that loving, compassionate energy to the other person that was involved in the past. So we're encouraged time and again to see these memories that come up as opportunities. Opportunities for what? to choose joy, opportunities to choose love over fear, opportunities to choose to bless creation in the moment, opportunities to cancel our judgment and our perceptions, which is something we're free to do in any given moment because it's our judgment, it's our activity, it's our use of our mind energy. So please hear all of this work as an invitation that is optimistic, that is hopeful, that is focused on your ability to choose, which is one of the things they say in all these great spiritual teachings. Your ability to choose is the thing that will never be taken from you. It'll never be taken from you. In each new present moment, you're free to choose again. And the recommendation from the Course in Miracles and the Way of Mastery is to choose for love, or to choose only loving thoughts. The last paragraph I read before stopping in Lesson 3 said, understand then that you are dealing with consciousness. You are not a physical being. You are capital S spirit. And you are intimately linked with all minds at all times. Therefore, forgiveness, this process of dismantling, canceling, putting aside my judgments and my perceptions, that can occur any time that I decide it can occur. Anyone I've ever believed has wronged me, I can change my perception about that. I can change my judgment about that in this very moment. I can rest back in the knowledge that all of this is just the flow of life. And in the big picture, we're all connected, and everybody's doing the best they can in each moment with whatever resources they have. And that nothing of value can be taken from me, and that nothing of value can be added unto me. And that if somebody was acting in a way that was less than love in any given moment, it was a cry for help and healing. It was not an attack on me. So the next section is titled, Reactivity Indicates the Need for Self-Forgiveness. And the text reads, rest assured, you will continue to project upon others whatever it is that remains unhealed and unforgiven or undismantled within yourself. Each time you react to another, you are being given a sign that there is some kind of energy that has been presented to your awareness that you have not dismantled or forgiven within yourself. If someone is critical of you and you react every time they are critical, rest assured, you have not healed that part of your own being, that part of your own experience of being critical of others. Again, we bump into one of the bottom line observations where it says, I will never be upset about anything anybody else ever says or does or doesn't do that I think they should, unless I'm still judging myself negatively for doing the same or similar thing. And here it is, right in the way of mastery. If someone is critical of me and I react every time they're critical, I should rest assured that I have not healed the part of my own being, the part of my own experience of being critical of others. If I'm holding a negative judgment against myself, and it may be hidden from my conscious awareness, but it's a negative judgment. It's a negative energy. It's something that doesn't add lovingly or in an expansive way to my energy field. So life is here to point that out to me. Life is here to bring me opportunities to become aware of what's hiding in my energy system that's less than love, that Michael Rice would call a disintegrative energy. And as I become aware of it, I have an opportunity to dismantle it, to withdraw my valuation of it, to learn to understand that it's false, and I don't need to choose for that false negative belief. I can choose love. I can choose compassion. I can choose joy or a bliss state in the next moment. This is a core teaching that's woven its way into many, if not all, of the great spiritual teachings I've ever encountered, and it's woven its way into the bottom line observations. Anytime I'm judging another and have upset about that discernment or judgment, what it means is I'm still holding a negative judgment about myself for doing the same or similar thing. And it may have been in the very distant past. And I may have almost no conscious awareness. And yet, I can use this as a guide to guide my observations and my exploration anytime that I'm in upset and my mind wants me to believe it's because somebody else did or didn't do something that I think they should. The very best use of my energy in that next moment is to explore, okay, when in the recent or the distant past have I done something similar that I'm still judging myself negatively for? And if I'm willing to ask that question and soften and breathe and open to see what bubbles up in my awareness, my personal experience has been, without fail, something comes to mind. And when that happens, my most productive next step is to apply the worksheet process, to figure out what goal I'm holding or was holding in that moment and cancel the goal, to ask to be shown whatever the hidden part of my mind is that's driving me or leading me to negatively judge myself, to feel the tension, the bitterness, the hurt. And here it is again in the way of mastery, just as it's in the bottom line observations. The text goes on and says, whether this is occurring now or whether it seems to be a pattern that you've interrupted and you no longer do, it doesn't matter. Maybe you haven't done this to anybody in 30 years. But if you see somebody lying or if you see somebody gossiping about someone else and you generate all kinds of upset in your mind and you think that's wrong, that person shouldn't lie and that person shouldn't gossip, rest assured, even if you haven't gossiped in 30 years, what's coming to the surface for you to be aware of is that you're still judging yourself negatively for times in the past when you've gossiped or you've lied. And it's coming up as an opportunity for you to dismantle that negative judgment against yourself. So the text here goes on and says, use your ordinary experience in each day to observe what pushes your buttons. And we'll give you a very simple technique for doing so. If you stay with it, it will reveal to you the energies that are in need of your forgiving or dismantling or putting down or canceling. The text goes on and says, the technique is quite simple. As you go through your day, observe when you feel as though you are in contraction, any kind of contraction. Are the muscles in the body tight? Is the breath getting shallow or being held? Does your voice become faster or louder when you speak about some energy in someone else? Just notice these things. Any of those things are a really good sign that something inside you needs to be dismantled, that you need to do healing within yourself. When you recognize that these kinds of signs are going on, in other words, that life has presented you with an opportunity to be disturbed, that opportunity to be disturbed is the same as an opportunity to heal. And it is a sign that there is something within you that's less than love that's up for healing. And therefore, if you wanted, you could choose it as a blessing that you're feeling disturbed. So here's the healing exercise they suggest. As soon as you recognize a tightness or a tension or an upset or any negative emotion in your system, turn your awareness away from whatever's on the outside that you think is causing that disturbance, and remember the first axiom, quote, I am the source of my experience. I'm feeling disturbed. What is it in me that needs to be healed? Close quotes. And then the exercise suggested is begin to breathe deeply. Breathe rhythmically. Let your body soften and relax. And then ask, quote, what is it within this other person's energy that I'm using to create my reaction? Close quotes. And you'll see it right away. Oh, my judgment is that they're being so critical. When I judge someone as being critical, that stirs up that judgment in me. And then ask yourself, so when have I done that to another? Where have I been critical of others? And I add to this that I haven't stopped judging myself negatively for. The text goes on and says, and I might see it right away. Well, I'm being critical because they're being critical. Or some memories will come back to me. They will be distasteful memories if I'm judging them. The trick here is to let them come back. Continue to breathe and soften and relax. Look upon that energy of being critical and just honor it. Accept it. Allow it. Surrender to it, for it was your creation. These are your creations coming back to you so that you might embrace them and transform them. The suggestion is just stay with it. Look directly at it. Ah, being critical. Yep, I can be critical, all right. I've been that way a lot in the past. I know that energy very well. And then, when you look upon some memory in which you've been the one being critical, look upon it with honesty and sincerity and say to yourself, I'm going to dismantle my judgments about that. I'm going to forgive myself for being critical. I'm going to dismantle my judgments of myself for being less than loving in that moment. I'm going to choose to teach only love. I'm going to choose to value only my loving thoughts. I'm going to watch these other thoughts about judgment and criticism and negativity. I'm going to watch them float by, but I'm only going to judge, or I'm only going to value and hold on to and pour my mind energy into the loving thoughts. And then the recommendation is watch that image dissolve and disappear from your mind. Bring your awareness back to the present moment and the person in front of you that you were thinking was pushing your buttons. Again, you don't need to say anything to them at all, although you might. But within yourself, dismantle your judgments of them for allowing the energy of being critical to temporarily make a home in their mind. And merely ask the Holy Spirit to replace your perception with the truth. Remember, every time I generate a perception, it's a cheap knockoff of the capital T truth of life. And sometimes it's a real cheap knockoff. Sometimes it's very inaccurate. Once I do that, I can ask the Holy Spirit to help me see the innocent light within this other person. As you cultivate this, you will become very, very good at it. You'll be able to do it as fast as it takes to snap your fingers. And once you begin to see the light in them, you can ask the Holy Spirit, so what is this critical energy in them masking? And what are they really crying out for? when you get to that point, you will feel compassion. For it will be revealed to you why they are hurting inside. And lo and behold, instead of being reactionary toward them, you just might be compassionate. You might extend the love that you are and that they are to them consciously in that moment. And then your choice of words and your own behavior might turn out to be different than you could ever have imagined. And in that moment, through you will flow exactly what serves them. The text goes on and says, when I was being nailed to the cross, there was one who raised the mallet to strike the nail. And as he raised the mallet, his eyes met mine for just a moment. I did exactly this process as I have described it to you. And by that time I had mastered it, so it was done very quickly. I asked myself, how have I ever wanted to drive a nail through someone else? And I remembered my murderous thoughts. I dismantled my negative judgment against myself for those murderous thoughts, and then I brought my attention back to that one, and I asked to only see the light in him. And I asked, what is it that this action is mirroring to me, and what is it masking within him? In that moment, I saw that one's soul, and I had great affection for that one's soul. And I felt compassion for that one. In that moment, mark my words, in that moment of eye contact, that other soul got it. And because my energy was different, it created the space in which that soul could make a new choice. That soul still had to make the choice. And yet it was so much easier because instead of defensiveness or attack, or accusation, there was this compassionate space of loving energy opened up. And that soul saw suddenly the entirety of its own experience. And it realized that if it allowed that mallet to fall upon the nail, it would be a decision to choose to continue being nothing more than a doormat for other people's perceptions. And in that very instant, that other soul decided to follow a path that would lead to sovereign mastery. That other soul decided never again to be a pawn of any government or any group or any faction or anyone. He dropped the mallet from his hand, and mind you, this was a Roman soldier. He stood up, walked away, and disappeared. That one has gone on to become a master that is known by literally thousands of beings. He's not currently in physical form. And though he's not in physical form, he visits many and teaches many. This one indeed incarnated perfect mastery and therefore transcended the world. And it all began as the result of my desire to teach only love. Now, that other soul and I have a very good friendship. So you see, you may not know how powerful your choice for healing is. You may not really see how deeply and profoundly it will affect you as you go on being a creator, as you go on forever. You could never possibly know what fruits will be born from that tree as you choose love, and that tree blossoms in the life of another. And yet, because all minds are joined, when you choose healing through forgiveness and the dismantling of judgments and perceptions, you literally create the space in which the other person can also heal their life far more easily. They always have the choice whether you're holding love or not. It just throws the door wide open. It creates a space that's more conducive to compassion So the text goes on and says, let no moment then be wasted. See nothing as ordinary, as we've talked about. Not a single day in your life, not a single moment is ordinary in your life. Your life is the miraculous expression of the extension of the creative energy in form. You are a mystery in mystery, extending the mystery of life. So see nothing as ordinary, and see not the perceptions that are taught to you of the world as being justified within yourself. You'll experience anger, as it said before. Just don't kid yourself into thinking it's justified. Be completely committed to rooting up and out of your own being anything that is unlike the love of the Christ mind. Please don't think that I'm the only one that can have this love this way. It's not true. You are here to learn to love as I learned to love. You are here to learn to extend your true nature as love the way I learned to extend my true nature as love. The reason for that is because that's what you are. And everything else is just a smokescreen. Forgiveness is necessary. Forgiveness is a skill and an art that will pay you dividend upon dividend upon dividend upon dividend. It will never cease paying you. Each moment that you choose to dismantle your judgments and perceptions, you choose to engage the process of forgiveness, you've literally saved yourself 1,000 years of suffering. And I mean this about as literally as one can mean it. In short, every act of forgiveness, the dismantling of a judgment or a perception, is a miracle that shortens the need for your experience in this dimension. When you find yourself in a situation that you believe is too big, rest assured it is because something big has finally come to the surface to be healed within you. Once it's healed, more power can shine forth through you. When you heal, it's like dissolving the rust from the inside of the pipe. So the conduit that you are for this loving creative energy, it can be wide open and unrestricted. Why does that happen? Why do these intense situations arise? Because you've reached the place where you're ready for more of it. And more of Christ can be lived through you. This is just like Dr. Michael Rice's talk about the vitality meter and the toxicity and trauma meter. And you will not encounter toxins and traumas that are beyond your capacity to resolve them with your own vitality. So if your vitality is sitting at a level 2 out of 10, or 100, choose your own scale, it doesn't matter. But if your vitality is sitting at a level 2, your higher wisdom knows not to serve up a trauma or toxin at a level higher than 1.5 or 1 or 1/4. Why? Because in the process of using your vitality to process out that trauma or toxin, you'll be down to the dregs. You'll be running on fumes. And that's why when I'm sitting at a low level of vitality, the tiniest little upset seems like a big deal. This is why people who are overstressed and miserable in their life get into road rage. Fly into a rage and use as their excuse someone else's driving skills or choices. I mean, like, just think about it. In terms of life, how much more petty can something be than what someone else's driving skills are? But when I'm sitting at a level 2 or 3 vitality, something as petty as somebody else's driving skills and my having to cope with their inefficient or rude or dangerous driving skills might seem like just about the only thing I can handle right now. It's going to drive me right off the edge. But if my vitality is up at an 8 or a 9, something as mildly irritating as someone else pulling in front of me and requiring me to hit the brakes or swerve isn't enough. I mean, I've got so much vitality, that's no big thing. I handle it. I handle it quickly and efficiently, and I send them loving thoughts as they move on their way. But if I'm sitting there at a level 2 or 3 vitality and somebody pulls in front of me so close that it requires me to be a race car driver reflexes and slam on the brakes to avoid hitting someone else, et cetera, I might have that upset around that and feel so shocked and drained and horrified by it that it ruins the rest of my day. So all of this is to say, when you have a deeply upsetting situation, it's because life knows you're ready to heal something that's blocking you from expressing more of the Christ love, the Christ mind, the love of the Christ mind. So understand, when you have a negative thought, when you remember a traumatic energy or upset, the best way to look at that or interpret it is it's coming to your awareness not as a punishment, not as karma. It's coming to your awareness as an opportunity for you to heal it, an opportunity for you to bring new presence to energies that once defeated you. That's just another way to say it. It's coming to your awareness so that you can dismantle your negative judgments and your negative perceptions about that situation when it first arose in your life. The last segment of this lesson, Lesson 3 in the Way of Mastery, deals with the very thing that Dr. Michael Rice has in his Getting the Stress You Need exercise. Ending your day, it says. It's very important that you let each day be sufficient unto itself. Michael Rice, when he's giving his talk on stress and stress management, says there's this quote from the Bible that says, sufficient for the day are the evils thereof. Evil means unripe or energies that are way off the mark. It's not a moral judgment. It's not, you're so evil, we're going to cast you into a burning fire and hell for all eternity. It's simply let yourself manage your stress by only setting goals that you can achieve within your next waking hour. That same wisdom is contained here in Lesson 3 in the Way of Mastery. It says, it is very, very important for you to let each day be sufficient unto itself. When you end your day, always truly end it. You don't need to take 4 hours of ritual. You can do this within a breath. As you take a deep breath, as you rest your head upon the pillow, look upon the day, embrace it with your consciousness, and as you let your breath go, say silently to yourself, I release and forgive this day. It has been perfect, and it is done. I release and dismantle any judgments or perceptions I may have created around this day. It has been perfect, and it is done. And then the text goes on and says, just let it go. Why would you let it go? Because if you do not, you will bring it with you. And after 3 weeks, you're still lamenting, oh my gosh, why did I make that decision 3 weeks ago? If only I'd made a different decision, this would not have happened. And then that would not have happened. And while that's probably true, the point is, here you are 3 weeks later, still hitting yourself over the head by bringing up the past with you. And when you're busy judging the past as negatively and beating yourself up over it, you miss the glory of the present moment. And you've all heard this 1,000 times because it's true. Obsessing over the past, worrying over the future, makes you miss the present moment, steals from you the ability to be alive and awake and aware and enjoy the gift of life in this moment. The text goes on and says, consciousness is a very subtle and powerful thing. You cannot help but create. Your mind energy as a creative force is always on. It's always creating. Remember that the goal of this pathway is to learn to deliberately create with perfect mastery. Therefore, just look on all the things of your day and say, it's good, it's done, it's finished. Each night when you rest your head upon the pillow and you know that you're about to go to sleep, be just like God in the biblical story of creation, in which it is written that on the seventh day God rested. God was finished in a sense within that story, so have that same quality at the end of your days. Just cancel every unachieved goal and ask to be shown how to have a restful night's sleep. That simple process in a breath or two is a powerful tool. And again, more details on that are contained in Dr. Michael Rice's Getting the Stress You Need or the Mind Goal Management Worksheet from that talk. And that worksheet's available on the website. If you go to the website, whyagain.org, and click on the Start Here words, and you scroll down, there'll be a listing for worksheets. And the Mind Goal Management Sheet is one of those worksheets. It contains the same wisdom that's here near the end of Lesson 3 in the Way of Mastery. At the end of your day, always end it. Let it be completely finished. Dismantle any negative thoughts or judgments you have about it. Dissolve your perceptions. Open a curtain in your practice. Put away everything you think you want. Your trifling treasures put away and leave a clean and open space for the Christ mind to come as you drift off to sleep asking to be shown how to have a restful night's sleep. All the same wisdom. And the invitation is there, and your opportunity to engage with that tool is there for you every night when you go to sleep. And we are encouraging you to do that. And then feel free to keep us posted. Give us a call, send us an email, tell us how that works for you. Again, tonight's a Thursday, so there will be a support group at 6:30 p.m. Central Time to 9 p.m. I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice. Maybe a mute-challenged Jeannie Rice.
It was. Thank you, Dr. Jim.
You're welcome and deserving. Have a great show.
Thank you. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mind Shifters Radio. Today is Thursday, July the 25th, 2024. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you in the queue to talk to us. And we would love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And apologies for yesterday. Blog Talk was down. We couldn't get in. We couldn't even get the archives. There was like nothing. And we attempted to switch over to Podbean, and Dr. Tim and I figured out how to get him on as host for his hour, but then we didn't have any callers. And we hadn't had time to send out a notice that you know, we were going to switch to Podbean, so we chose to just let it go. However, I've put in the notes for yesterday that if, you know, just to remind everybody that if Podbean or if Blog Talk is down and you can't get in, it's not working, to switch over to Podbean. And I've put the instructions, again, of, you know, how you can load that to your phone and have it ready. And then when we go live, if you've clicked, like once you've loaded Podbean app onto your phone, then click that you're going to follow us. Now, it'll show up with two Mindshifters Radio. The one with mine and Michael's picture on it is actually from Blog Talk, and the one with a glowing heart is the one from Podbean. And if you click that you're going to follow us, then when we go live on Podbean, it'll actually send you a notice that we are live, and then you can click and get into it. And there is a, looks like the old-timey phone handle that if you click on that, then it actually puts you in to call in to talk to us. And you do it all on your app on your phone, so it's not a number that you dial in or anything. But you can call in that way. You can type into the chat room in Podbean, and we can read your question over the air. So there's, you know, it's a little more awkward just because we're not used to it. So I was really glad I turned on Blog Talk early this morning to see if it was back up, and it was. So, but those notes are in yesterday's. So if you go there, then it'll direct you of how to get Podbean. It's free. Get it on your phone, and that way you can still call in and we can still have a conversation. So we would like to do that instead of just having a blank day. And, you know, we had talked about, since we didn't have any callers, do we just continue on and do a recording, but we'd just be talking to each other, Dr. Tim and I. And so we decided just to let it go. But if you have that on your phone, then the next time that Blog Talk's not working for some reason, then we can switch over and have that and still have a conversation, still be here to support you. So with that being said, I'm going to welcome Michael, and we do have an email from someone with a question when you're ready for it.
Cool. Well, the first thing I want to do, sweetie, is just acknowledge you for your brilliance in this field of computers and all the stuff you handle and how you keep the archives going and have organized this work that couple of wonderful volunteers are doing to archive into YouTube. I mean, just thank you. It's awesome.
You are welcome. And day before yesterday, you had said something about there was like 200 and some videos on our YouTube channel. And no, there's over 500 on there now. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Wow. I didn't realize that they'd done that much. Thank you both. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, the gentleman that's doing the special shows has finished that, and he said, you know, he's got home projects through the weekend, and then he plans to get back on it. And then Andre has gone from January through October of 2021, so all of those shows are on there. And I've been attempting to upload all the ones from the beginning of the year. I'm about a week behind, even in the notes on Blog Talk, but I've downloaded those shows and plan on getting that put over there maybe this weekend. We've had Aria for 3 days, and actually she spent the night one night, so we've had her for like 72 hours or something, and she takes a lot of energy, and so I'm a little behind on that, but we're getting there.
And her still point session was absolutely awesome.
Yes, it was.
So welcome, everybody. Delighted that you're here. Did we get to move forward to the next level of this conversation? I find that for me, I am getting a whole new level of teaching from having engaged in doing personal intensives with folks. It's sort of opened a whole new arena of understanding, and with the feedback that I've been getting, just what all is at work there. So, and you've got an email, so let's check out the questions. from your email, sweetie.
Okay. And this is actually from Sean, one of the gentlemen who's doing the transcripts or changes from MP3s to MP4s. He said, well, I've opened the wrong one. Hang on just one second. Let me find.
Right.
Okay. He says, these questions are inspired from a forgiveness seminar the other day. So are goals just thoughts? And if so, where do thoughts come from? Because I find myself waiting for thoughts, like practical ones. I don't make thoughts. And then there are thoughts not based in reality / actuality that get everyone into trouble through the imagination. A thought converts into a molecule. It's what mode our spirit is in that determines if it's flushed out or absorbed. Is that correct? Did you hear what I think I meant?
Okay. Well, maybe, honey, while I start to talk about that, you could just do a quick copy and paste it in a text and send it to me so I can follow the whole train of thought.
Sure.
So, first of all, my take is that most people think that because their mind is cycling information, they're thinking. And my take is that's not thinking. That a lot of what people cycle are nothing but genetic bits of information that get resonated into activity and come forward as a piece of information, but it's just a fragment of some kind of a past experience. So psychic information is no more thinking than, you know, when I say to a computer, what's 2 + 2? And it says, well, the computer didn't think about the answer. It just cycled information. My take is that a true thought is something that comes from being. And it's something that is created, intuited from being. It feeds us information. Oftentimes it can come from Rukha Dukhicha. Remember the definition from the Aramaic of Rukha Dukhicha is it's a feminine elemental force that, one, undoes the effects of our errors. And that means can go right down to restructuring our genes and the effects of our errors, which means everything, every impact that any error that we ever made, if we turn it over, can be undone. And then the second part of the definition of Rukha Dukhicha is she who teaches us the truth. So we can be fed thoughts directly from Rukha. And those thoughts, I would offer, are thoughts that either come from being or from Rukha. And we would label them, you know, it's information, but we would label them as insight. Oftentimes for me, a time when I get information that, like, I've never even conceived of this work, it's not something that my mind made up. The insights that have come from it, I have been taught through intuition would be my offering from Rukha. And oftentimes, like, for instance, if you go back to the early recordings of Why Is This Happening to Me Again, and you go back to 4-hour Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop, which I recorded about close to 40 years ago. Time flies when you're having fun. And you listen to any recordings since then, like if you listen to the audio track of Why Is This Happening to Me Again, we actually haven't changed that one in 20 plus years. We've done 2 or 3 switch outs of the 4-hour Why Is This Happening to Me Again video. But the original Why Is This Happening to Me Again audio, we haven't changed that in, I don't know, 35 years, because we've gotten such good feedback in terms of how impactful and how powerful that particular Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop is, how the information came together. But if you go back to those early recordings, you'll notice that one of the key things that I do, I mean, it's one of the foundation points of Why Is This Happening to Me Again, within the opening minutes of the workshop up until about, I'm not even sure now, probably 15 years ago, at the top of the board, you'll notice on the whiteboard, if you look at any of those videos, I've got the words deny, suppress, project. And for 2.5 decades, that's what the top of the board was. That was the focal point. And one day, I'm breathing and just, you know, focusing on understanding the work. And I am told directly, using my name, Michael, it's not suppress. I used to have deny, talk about denial. I meant denial caused suppression, but it actually doesn't. And that was explained to me 15 years ago. And it wasn't my mind that explained it to me. It's like, Michael, that's not suppression. That's dissociation. And it's like, that was a whole new concept for me, that, and the difference between the two being that when I suppress something, well, I've hidden that for myself, but it's there and, you know, I can access it. But when I realized the word and what I was shown, what I was taught, when I realized the word was dissociate, it's like, this is now unconscious. This is now, you're not just hiding this from yourself. This is now no longer yours. The difference, I mean, that's a mega shift in the workshop, that it's just something that's suppressed, as opposed to you are cut off from this. You have now created, and this is part of what clued me into understanding that we are not designed to have an unconscious mind. The only reason anyone has an unconscious mind is because of the act of denial and dissociation and hiding information and hiding beyond just, again, beyond the idea of suppression, is literally in order for my mind to hallucinate a picture according to my instructions, and the instructions go something like this: this is not my fault, this is Bill's fault. Well, if I'm in pain, if I'm in some form of hostility or fear, I'm in error, I have a problem. But the minute that I say, and Bill did it to me, I have to hide, I have to dissociate from the very content that would show me what my error is. And so that's an example of, it's not just cycling information in the mind, which is what most people call thinking. And for me, the best definition I've been able to come up with, and this comes from my own guidance, and I haven't heard this anywhere else, I don't know that anybody else would agree. Some people might tell me that I'm crazy with this definition. But my best definition of thinking is that thinking is the ability to keep love conscious, active, and present when something less than love comes up in your mind. And the reason why thinkers are geniuses is because if you keep love present, it's the master solvent. And if there's error in your mind and error surfaces and you're able to keep love present, that error dissolves, which means you'll now have access to truth. Now you become a genius. So thoughts, I would offer, thinking is not just bits of information in a computer or in the mind. It really is that ability to keep love present, which dissolves errant energies and gives us access to deeper level of truth and removes us from the hidden parts of our own minds. So some thoughts, or what people call thoughts, would be just something resonated out of genetics. And what many people do with the thoughts that are resonated out of genetics, because they're in denial and dissociation, is they then use those thoughts, those fragments of information, to literally build perception, the constructs of their mind. And to me, the genius of Yeshua showing us that when you, that whole process is driven by goals, and when you cancel a goal, you get to access the dissociated parts of your mind. You get to open your own unconscious. That's like the most brilliant piece of information to ever come to Earth in the realm of psychology or psychiatry. What you would call thoughts that are not based, you know, the next thing you say here is then there are thoughts that are not based in reality, actuality, that get everyone into trouble through the imagination. Imagination is a way to bring in information. I mean, it literally is a spiritual faculty, and it's designed to benefit us. I would think that if there are thoughts that are getting you into trouble, there are thoughts that are coming from somewhere other than being. They're not coming from, it's information that is not coming from being. And then your next thought was a thought converts into a molecule. So what Bruce Lipton is showing, and if you just Google Bruce Lipton just go to YouTube and put your search in for Bruce Lipton, and he shows that in the laboratory, what they can do is they can track the fact that when a piece of information enters the mind, it also shows up in the so-called body as a molecule, as a neuropeptide. And that neuropeptide circulates around in the structure till it finds a cell with a receptor site that matches. And then, so you're saying a thought converts into a molecule. It's what mode our spirit is in that determines if it's fleshed out or absorbed. I'm not sure what that means, so maybe you could drop me a note with a little more information, and I understand your did you hear what I think I meant, because that last line, that it's what mode our spirit is in that determines if it is fleshed out or absorbed. I need some clarification on that one. So if you happen to be on the show, push one, and we could chat about it. Otherwise, and when Jeannie sent you this back, perhaps we can have a little more conversation about it. So that's my take on that question. And if you're out there in listener land, our call-in number is 563-999-3581, 563-999-3581. If you're on one of those stations where we can't see you in our control panel, if you call that number, you're listening to the show directly. And then if you push one, raise his hand, and we'll be having a conversation. So, Machine, do we have anybody out there with a hand up in the phone queue or anything happening in the chat room?
No, it is all quiet. So we have 40 minutes. Come on, somebody press one. We weren't here yesterday. You've got to have some thoughts.
And we can move back to the information I've been trying to get covered for the last 2 weeks. So if we tap back in, the last thought I ended with was the idea that with tools, our painful experiences can be the opportunity for monumental healing, literally the chance to forgive, undo or dismantle generations of inherited repeating traumas which show up as those fragments of information we were just talking about coming to awareness. And of course, this would be a good place to watch Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And we do have the latest Why Is This Happening to Me Again? It used to be that that was always a paid workshop. It was one of the ways that we supported traveling, paying our own expenses, and doing our workshops free. And we did I think it was about a 3 hour and 20 or 3 hour and 40 minute workshop back in 2020 or 2021. In any event, if you go to our YouTube channel, type in Michael Rice. You'll be looking at our YouTube videos and go down the list, and you'll find the latest Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop. So it'd be a good place to listen. And because life abhors us holding on to or hiding disease energies, no denial, that act of speaking or thinking as though something outside of us is the cause of something moving inside of us, denial is the main tool people use to avoid looking at what they're pained by. the act of denial guarantees we'll experience repeatedly the impact of the energies that we hide from ourselves. Carl Jung says it this way, until the unconscious becomes conscious, it will direct our lives and we will call it pain. We will call it fate. So recognizing that pain has a purpose. It's a designated fertilizer. It's designed to make your ears grow. It's a messenger that shows us where our disintegrative energies are stored. Stand in willingness to look at where disintegrative energy is stored, acquire the skill of dealing with it and the tools with which to do it, and you'll find that your pain begins to disappear. Denial, on the other hand, causes the mind to hide or dissociate from the direct experience of the painful energetic patterns that are moving in you at any given time. Denial seems to protect us from pain, but our hidden patterns impact and distort what we call thinking, our decisions, our feelings, our perceptions, behaviors, diseases, cellular chemistry, attitudes, and our creative processes as well. Many people, since these are the energies with which we create our lives, wonder why life gives us bittersweet sweet experiences. Gee, wonderful things come along, then all of a sudden something comes and bites me. Why? Because there's something in me that's resonating that I don't want to feel, that I don't want to deal with. And that resonance, you know, it's like life is set up to respond to your whole energetic field. Recognize that everything, every piece of energy that you hold from you is a frequency. It is a vibration. You know, Nikola Tesla, man is responsible for so much in our modern energetic world, including, like, we wouldn't have our houses wired with electricity if it weren't for Nikola Tesla. He said, if you want to understand the universe, start to think in terms of vibration. So when you realize that every energy that you hold in you has a specific frequency, and energy by definition is motion. One of the expressions of energy is motion. And anything that moves in another medium creates an energy wave. Think about you're standing on the edge of a pond, and the pond is perfectly still. And you pick up a rock and you throw it out in the center of the pond. What happens? You get waves. Wherever that rock interacts with the water, there is an interference pattern. The interference pattern tells you about the energy that sourced the pattern. For instance, if I took a little tiny pea-sized pebble, I can tell something by the wave that leaves it when it hits the water. I can tell something about that pebble, i.e., little tiny wave must have been a pretty small pebble. If, on the other hand, I throw an 8-inch diameter rock into the water, I can tell something about that rock by its interaction with the surface of the water, the size of the wave that it generates. So recognize that as an energetic being, every thought you ever thought, every feeling you've ever felt, every reality you've ever structured in your mind, they are integrated energy patterns that are constantly sending out signals, constantly sending out radio waves, just like the TV tower over there is constantly sending out a signal. So your whole physiology, your genes, every piece of information that flows through you is setting up a field. And through this law called resonance, and the law of resonance basically says that when two energy fields are in tune or in harmony with each other, there's an interchange of energy between them. So through this law called resonance, life is designed to bring us someone who's in tune with our most powerful energetic patterns contained within the mind. The more we push down and denied our pain, the more we blame others for what we're feeling, the more deeply our patterns are embedded, and the more powerfully they resonate as a result of being pushed on. Imagine that I have a 3-foot diameter spring sitting on the floor over here. Can the spring sitting on the floor do anything? No. But what if I come along and I push down on the spring and I lock it? Push down and I lock it and I push down and I lock it. And then I get 3 or 4 big guys to go over and really help me. And man, we push that puppy down and lock it. What happens when I let the lock off? All of that stored energy causes the spring to rocket. Well, the more we blame others for what we're feeling, the more amplitude the energy wave is that resonates from that particular patterned energy. And anyone who has the matching energy, anybody with the matching bag of garbage or the matching bag of beauty, is going to be drawn to us and drawn to express that energy in themselves. And if it's a dis-ease energy, then somebody's going to show up in resonance with our dis-ease energy, and their behavior will tend to be driven by behaviors that will then arouse in us what it is we've been hiding. Literally, a certain condition in one person's mind will tend to resonate or activate that same condition in another person's mind. If it's hostility, then people are going to resonate somebody with a matching bag of garbage. If it's wonderment and beauty, then people are going to resonate somebody in the matching bag of wonderment and beauty. So when you realize that life is set up, like the genius of how the game is set up, so that you don't get away with anything. Remember in the scriptures they said nothing will remain hidden, everything will be made known in the light of day? It's all going to show up. We think by hiding it, we're never going to have to deal with it. It's through this law of resonance that we get to confront, and if we choose to take responsibility, correct the patterns. And, of course, the tool of correction is first century Aramaic forgiveness. It's a tool that leads inside and heals the disturbed energies we've been carrying, in some cases, perhaps for generations. Instead of dealing with pain as life intended, most people get stuck holding those energetic patterns in denial, hidden. And if I hold those energetic patterns in denial, guess who's going to show up? Somebody with a matching bag of garbage. So you can't keep things hidden for too long. So when we do this game of hiding from ourselves, we create an unnatural state, this unconscious mind, and out of those unconscious patterns, a chain of events is created, a whole world, literally perception, out of that which we've denied and dissociated from. Information inside of us is resonating into activity, literally creates a whole world that we call perception, a false world where we blame others for what's moving in us, or where we blame others for what we're feeling. What we're unknowingly doing to ourselves with our own minds sooner or later becomes conscious. So our minds use the energies moving in us, the energies resonated by them. Literally, you know, if I hold something I've denied and dissociated from, I'm sending out an energy field. Somebody with a matching bag of garbage is going to tend to show up and be motivated to do a behavior based on what's resonating in them, based on what I'm sending out, the energy that I'm sending out. And when they do the behavior they do, they literally then resonate or give us the opportunity to look at what it is we're hiding from ourselves. For me, and what most people do is then create an image of them, that is, whoever it is that resonated, what they don't want to deal with, out of what's moving in themselves. So now we have a false picture directed by our errant minds, and they show up inside of us in our perceptual construct with our problem attached. And, of course, the way to tell that this is true is just to notice you're the one who's feeling it. When there's upset and there's pain, what's moving in you is what's moving in you. So as an example, a person who feels hate because they're a container for hatred. And by the way, hate kills the hater. Anger kills the angry. Another is the object of the hatred or anger and is blamed by the hater for the presence of hate. But if you really start being honest with yourself, you can't avoid the conclusion that hatred or any other emotion is an internal experience. And the most, probably the second most common drug on the planet is anger. Most people think of anger as an emotion. It's not an emotion. Anger is an anesthetic. It's an internally generated drug. It helps us to keep things hidden from ourselves. So if one is a container for hatred, but their mind is showing them images of everybody else, can you do enough out there to try to force them to change? It was interesting. I listened to somebody had sent me a link to a podcast the other day, and I listened to it, and this person was defining anger as a tool for changing other people. It's like, no, anger is a tool for anesthetizing me against my own pain. So if one realizes that they're a container for anger or sadness or grief or rage or fear or hatred or vengeance, where's the only place that can be changed? It can only be changed in the container. It can't be changed anywhere else. So the process of forming unconscious perceptions leaves us believing the fallacy that as we look at the pictures or projections generated by our brains, our self-generated perceptions, that, you know, we've been led to believe that our eyes are showing us something that's outside of us. And it's a lie. Codependence and denial have the identical definition. The belief that someone or someone else, someone outside of us or someone else, is responsible for what you're doing to yourself with your own mind. And the fallacy is that someone else is the cause of what you're feeling, what's inside, that's inside of you. And nothing could be further from the truth. And the belief that others cause you to feel, or that others are responsible for the energy that's moving in you. So this errant conclusion that somebody else is responsible for what's moving in me leaves me stuck in the belief of, why are they doing this to me again? That those experiences are forced on us from the outside, when the truth is that the world of pain perception is a totally internal, self-generated, self-imposed world. This self-imposed world, which without having and applying the tools to change the content of one's own minds, seems impossible to escape, is usually based on generations of errant perception, generations of denial and unresolved pain. Generations of denial and unresolved pain. So let's look at a, well, I'll check in with Jean. Miss Jean, do we have anybody? Is this making sense for everybody? Does it arouse any questions or thoughts? If so, again, our call-in number is 563-999-3581. Call that number you're listening to the show. And then if you push one, that raises a hand in the control panel. We'll be having a conversation.
Nobody has a hand up. However, it resonated for me, some information. I was working with a lady last night, And I may or may not have given her the correct direction. However, it kind of goes along with what you're talking about, the thoughts and the feelings and the emotion. And attempting to get her to get out of her story and go inside. And so what I was telling her was, you know, your thoughts can be lying to you and usually are. I said, but instead of focusing on the thought, I said, go inside and look at the feeling. You know, so the example I gave her was, you know, I feel sad because somebody dissed me. So instead of thinking about them dissing you, you know, because in their thoughts they may have just been having a bad day and their tone of voice came across wrong, and in their mind they weren't even directing anything at you. So, you know, by saying that this is what they meant is a lie. So instead of trying to figure it out or stick with the thought, then go with the feeling. You know, why do I feel sad? Well, why do I care about what somebody else thinks of me? What's the sadness about? What does it originate with? Is this a repeat all my life that I've carried sadness or fear or whatever? And focus on releasing the sadness. Go inside and say, okay, what does this look like inside of me? How does it feel inside of me? And can I change it? And, of course, we can change it by changing the thought. But instead of thinking, oh, they dissed me, then think they must have a hard day and they reflected it and I took it on, but it wasn't really about me. Something was going on in them. So changing the thought can help release the sadness or the thought, oh, they're against me or they're trying to tear me down, may not be true at all for them. Your mind creates the meaning that it has for you, and you can change that. It has nothing to do with fixing the outside problem or changing anything outside of you. Emotion is energy in motion. So it's energy that's moving around inside of you. And, of course, if you choose to hang on to it, it's eventually going to land on a cell and lock into the cell. It's going to make a physical manifestation of that sadness or anger or whatever, and you don't need that. So this is the thought behind the feeling, but I'm going to let go of the thought, and I'm going to concentrate on the feeling. Why is it resonating in me so strongly? And then I went on. But is that kind of along the correct line?
You're right on track. That's it. Exactly. You'll remember I've played the song for you before. You know, in the early days at Heartland, was a gentleman named the singing dentist, Joel Goldstein, that lived at Heartland with his family for a couple of years. And he was a music director, and he wrote a song called Stuck in My Story, My Pain and My Glory. And the whole song is about the repeating experience if I don't ever take responsibility for what's moving inside of me.
Right.
Most people live their whole lives in their story.
Yeah, I told her, I said, you know, hanging on to the story and staying in it is a distraction. It keeps you in victimhood, and what's that going to get you? It might get you attention, and some people might go, oh, my gosh, what you had to go through, bless your heart, and all that, but is that what you really want? You want to go inside and change what's going on in you, and until you go inside and look at what's in you without the story, you know, what's the sadness, what's the fear, and go inside yourself and drop the story, let go of the story and just say, what's going on in me? Why does this feeling keep coming up? And then move into, okay, this experience happened, but this is what I'm doing to heal from it and hopefully then help someone else who's stuck in that same kind of a victimhood to be able to get out of it as well.
Exactly. Right on, honey. And, of course, as I shared in the workshop this past weekend in the Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing Club, when you choose to ask somebody to be responsible for what's moving in them or for what they're doing or what they've done, you have to be careful because you may be playing John the Baptist and they may want to take off your head. That's just one of the risks of inviting people to come out of their denial, is then the mind will tend to puke everything that's uncovered onto the person who's, you know, in the culture we have a saying, you know, don't kill the messenger. It's not about
the outside, but when Messenger uncovers something, if somebody doesn't have the tools, the tendency is to take it out on the Messenger. Any other thoughts for you in that regard, Tweety?
No, I think that's it. I just kind of wanted to, it was, you know, along the same lines what you were saying with what I had said to her last night. I just wanted to make sure I was on track with what I told her.
You are absolutely on track, sweetie.
And nobody has a hand up yet, so I'd say keep going.
Okay. So then.
Oh, you have a hand just went up.
Oh, okay, perfect. Let's say hello.
Okay, I think it's Dusty, 904. You're on the air.
Well,
we haven't heard that young man's voice in a while. Welcome. Aloha.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Some things you said resonated quite powerfully with me. And first of all, that thing you said about thinking, incorporating some love, I thought was, I always like that. I always like that about this program and your presentation. You bring that in, love in some way. I have a, or not but, and I have, I won't even say it's an analog, maybe it's just a further expression of why is this happening to me? I was listening,
right.
And there was a book written, I think it was in the early 80s, I'm not sure. Sheila Ostrander, it was Women Who Love Too Much, and kind of the same sort of thing. It's about why do women specifically, not gender, keep going back to, abusive men, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So this therapist I know, and I will mention her name because I think she is one of the most amazing beings. She's passed. Jean Jensen up in Sun Valley, Idaho, had a class. And what she did is she organized a class around that book. And what she wound up with was about a dozen women who were, quote, incest survivors, unquote.
Right.
They had a class that was 6 weeks long, twice a week. It wasn't cheap. Don't sign up. Don't even think about coming unless you're all in. This is not a dip your foot in. It was hand in hand with, I will say, 12-step thinking at the time in some ways. So I didn't know about this. They knew about this. This was a very, very powerful private 6 weeks. They had, I think, they were at the end of the third session. Most of the same women kept signing up. So Jean dropped a bomb on them. At least it was a bomb for them. She said, oh, what? How about we invite some men into our group? And there was like a gasp.
Right.
Ah, aren't they the enemy? Aren't they the enemy? And she goes, no, it's not about gender. It's about behavior. And and they still didn't want any part of it. And finally, Jean said, I will pick a list of three guys from this valley. I don't know how many people lived there. It was a very high-end valley, I have to say. Education level was pretty high. And maybe 15,000 people, I don't know. And
were you one of the men?
Well, evidently I was, because I got a call from Jean. And Jean said, I will pick these men and you vote. And I have to tell you this part, because I still almost, it's all I can do to hold the tears of just, oh my God, back every time I feel it. she called me up. She said, well, and she told me the story. And she, because she knew I had expressed the desire, I knew her personally, to work on my stuff, which wasn't sexual, but it was everything else, from childhood on, blah, 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 blah. So I got to join that group if I want. She says, you want to do this thing? I went, yeah. So I went up there, and I have to tell you that we sat in a circle, maybe, I don't know, 10, 11, counting Gene, maybe a dozen, no more. And everybody would go around the circle pretty much and tell their story. And I've never seen this like this before or since. Everybody there held this space sacred for whoever was talking and made it safe, just like a bubble of loving intent around them. Honey, you say whatever you got to say. And nobody was going, oh, I'm just, you know how in conversation a lot of people, all they're thinking about is what they want to say next. No, it was none of that. You listen. No questions. So it came around to me, and I thought, what the heck? And I just dove into my stuff, and we went around, and I think I did a couple classes myself. The point, part of the point is that here are, talk about things, not just denial. These women were valorous. When I play taps down at the beach, I play for the fallen, yeah, the military fallen, but for valor in all walks of life. These women embodied it like nobody. To be able to go back to when you were a little girl and were repeatedly molested, and you're willing to go back into that and not pretend it didn't happen, or be so numbed out and damaged that you can't go back for some reason.
Yep.
They would bring things up, and reaching into that. And, I mean, there was wailing. Every class had three or four people that wailed, and I'll have to say I was one of them every now and then because of my stuff. And one thing that Gene taught and kept mentioning, and it was so true, because, I mean, I have a, I mean, it was definitely true for me. It was true for all of us, but I had a situation. I spent, months just working on one thing. It was sometimes old damages. Why is this happening to me kind of thing? Old damages just seem like, especially if you're very young, are like dark kind of shadowy things. And you go, oh, I just made that up. No, that didn't really happen. Did that happen? I don't know. I don't think. No, I'm just making that. She goes, no. Treat it as if it happened. And 90-umpteen% of the time, it had happened. And these, oh, man. This was the most powerful dynamic group I'd ever been into. And I think it parallels what you're doing. I've got a little more to say on it, but do you think that that is a good parallel or an analog?
Sounds right on to me. And I would like to just take a moment with you to acknowledge Jean Jensen, though she's not in her body anymore.
Oh,
she
thank
may
you.
Well be listening in. Just acknowledging her for being able to create such a powerful space. That's awesome. As I do that, and I don't know whether I'm getting that from Gene right now, but my whole body's just tingling right now.
Yeah, I'm crying. Yeah, I get it. Yeah, you're right on, brother. Right on. And, she was, oh, my God. And she... She's brilliant too. She was, I guess, I don't know what the right term is these days, but she was a lesbian too, kind of thing, you know, and I didn't know if I was walking into a charged situation or what, but I knew her well enough to know that she was the real deal. She was,
right.
Yeah, thank you for acknowledging, Jean. I really appreciate that. And
you need more people like that.
Oh, boy. Oh, and people like, I can't tell you how many people, I mean, most cultures are built on a certain huge amount, actually, of cognitive dissonance, you know,
yep.
Denial. And absolute denial. And, you know, I'll believe what I want to believe when I want to believe it. And that whole thing, you know, like the Greeks, oh, we're the first ones with the democratic thing. All those, a third of them were slaves, right? And, think, you know, it's just, this is all nonsense. I mean, it's down to the individual. People like you and Jean and others that step up to the plate. And I will have to say, after, I mean, I did 2 6-week classes, and then there was an ongoing thing that started at the end of that, and I joined it for about a year or so. And I got so much cleaned out of me that was absolutely tearing me apart, but I couldn't get a handle on it. And she,
life without tools is hell.
What's that?
Life without tools is hell. And that's
yeah,
where
man.
Most people live.
That's right. That's right. And I know people that have just, I mean, it's all relative. Too, I guess just everything's relative, I suppose. But
it depends how much hell your relatives lived in.
yeah, dun, 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 dun. And but you know, how many people do I know that had just a smidge of what these gals went through, and what some of your people go through, and won't even go near it. Sometimes because it's just, they're just numb. And other times because I don't want to do it. Or I've got enough money that I can just pretend everything is fine. Or whatever it is, you know, whatever the case is. But I want to acknowledge, yeah, thank you for acknowledging, Jean. I didn't see that coming. Man, that was beautiful. But these women, and I guess, other than to say that I was helped through some things that I don't know how else I would have gotten through it, was the fact that I came to the conclusion of, this is just me speaking, just first person, but in my opinion, anybody that molests girls, it's second degree murder. And that's what
soul
I saw
murder.
In that. What's that?
It's a soul assault.
And, oh, yeah.
And it's not just women. Over the years.
No, it's not just women. No, it's not.
I've run into just about as many men who've been sexually abused as women.
Oh, okay. I haven't run into as many, but you would be in a position to have that kind of balance. But the ones I have run into still won't deal with it. They'll do other things. They'll anesthetize in other ways. And but my hat's off to anybody, whether they take your class or a Jean Jensen type class, if there ever is one like that again, that are willing to go into their stuff and be a warrior. That's what a real warrior does, as far as I'm concerned.
Now, my take in working with people over the last 50 years is that I would venture a guess that somewhere between 60 and 70% of people in this culture mm-hmm. in America today have been mm-hmm. sexually abused.
Boy, that's a high number, brother. Wow.
A high number.
Whoa. No, that's disturbing.
And I'm talking both male and female.
Right, exactly. But still, that's That's mega disturbing and
bizarre.
Especially, because in this culture, none of it's supposed to happen. That didn't happen. Don't talk about it. And I know all the abuse that I went through. My best friend didn't know about it. Nobody knew. Mine was not sexual. It was the only reason I got in that room. But it was every bit as intense.
And the only way that it's ever going to end is when people open up and clean it out, because it becomes a power person dynamic and just gets passed from generation to generation.
Yeah. It kind of boils down to an individual stand, don't you think? I mean, each person's got to be their own advocate in a sense, you know. I mean, you've got to want to be more. You've got to want to be who you really are, or what you really are. And what was one last little note about this room, because this room was just unbelievably powerful. They called themselves incest survivors, but there was four or five of them that weren't surviving. And I could see it. I never said anything about it, but I could see it. Not everybody does well, no matter. But they were in there swinging. They went down. If they did go down, they went down swinging. God bless them, every one of them. And so, I don't know. Well, that's part of my pep talk.
So let's join. And let's invite everybody that's on the show right now, join in opening the space of safety for a shift in this culture where sexual abuse at whatever age, at whatever stage of life one's experienced, that it becomes safe to open, clear out, and that there are enough people who know how to hold a space for that, that we can really truly begin the healing of this dynamic.
Yeah.
Me, one of the things, you hear me talk quite a bit about my granddaughter, and she's just getting ready to turn six. And, we're continuously educating her. And one of the things we're working with is developing in her an awareness of what's going on around her and of her power so that she can stay clear in a culture that is so rampant with.
And I think that's beautiful.
And sexual abuse.
And since we've got a minute and you opened up that door, may we all just open up our hearts for the beneficence of just what you stated. We could all be together and do together.
Fine.
And just, yeah.
Time for healing. Jeannie, you had a thought, sweet?
Well, I'm not sure there's time now. I was going to read. There's a song. You can look up the lyrics. It's called Warrior.
Go for it.
By Demi Lovato. And it's this. Yeah.
Reading with you, sweetie. Go for it.
This is a story that I have never told. I got to get it off my chest and let it go. I need to take back the light inside you stole. You're a criminal, and you steal like you're a pro. All the pain and all the truth I wear like a battle wound. So ashamed, so confused. I was broken and bruised, but now I'm a warrior. Now I've got thicker skin. I'm a warrior, and I'm stronger than I've ever been. And my armor is made of steel, and you can't get in. I'm a warrior, and you can't hurt me again. Out of the ashes, I'm burning like a fire. You can save your apologies because you're nothing but a liar. I've got shame and I've got scars that I will never show. I'm a survivor in more ways than you know. Because now I'm a warrior. There's a part of me I can't get back. A little girl grew up too fast. All it took was once. I'll never be the same. Now I'm taking back my life today. Nothing left that you can say, because you're never going to take the blame anyway. Now I'm a warrior. I've got thicker skin. I'm a warrior. I'm stronger than I've ever been. My armor is made of steel. You can't get in. I'm a warrior. You can never hurt me again.
Breathing with you, sweetie.
That's beautiful.
Breathing with you. And isn't it bizarre that
yes.
we live in a country that is on the verge of possibly electing a man who has self-proclaimed that that's exactly what he does?
Yeah. that's the writing on the wall in blood, yes. And,
yeah.
and
absolutely bizarre.
And in that poem of Jeannie's, there's probably more people that have been abused that actually can take it on, but I don't know that I've ever run into what might be an abuser that ever acknowledged a drop.
We've seen it in intensives.
Oh, good. I'm glad to know, because I have yet to see.
Yeah, we've had some. Maybe the next show tomorrow we'll talk about that, but there are a couple of cases where we've had people who've admitted and processed with someone who was processing having been abused. And we'll talk about that tomorrow on the show.
Well, thank you, one and all.
In the meantime. All right, my friend, thank you for bringing that conversation up. It sounds like one that it's time to come up, and we'll open the show tomorrow, and I'll share a couple of instances where the perpetrator and the abuser type, not that they were a match pair, but in different circumstances, came together at Heartland and really did just some monumental healing work together. So talk
great.
About that tomorrow. In the meantime, everybody, have the best year yet of your eternal life. An awesome gift to give the world. Blessings. Thanks for calling.
It can get lonely climbing Mount McKinley, so to entertain myself, I go to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, I can play hundreds of online casino-style games for free, like online slots, bingo, slingo, and more. Plus, I get a daily login bonus. It's just too bad that up here, I don't have anyone to share my excitement with. Woohoo!
Woohoo!
Live the Chumba life anytime, anywhere. Play for free now at ChumbaCasino.com.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.